tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. It's June 26, 2024, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. We started off yesterday's show picking on Tesla's Cybertruck and the 11,000 units that were recalled. Well, they're not the only company dealing with recalls. Porsche is recalling more than 31,000 of its Taycan electric cars due to a brake malfunction. According to Porsche's letter to the NHTSA, that's obviously the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration, the recall impacts 31,689 Taycan models. After receiving several reports about brake hose leakages, Porsche issued an investigation. Although no accidents have been reported in the U.S., Porsche is issuing the recall out of an abundance of caution. So, see, kids, making cars is hard, and even people who've been doing it for 6 or 7 decades have trouble now and again. Now, one company that definitely hasn't been building cars for 6 or 7 decades is Rimac. Mate Rimac has launched a new autonomous Level 4 electric car brand called Verne. Mate Rimac, obviously, is the founder of Rimac. This is the same company that builds the Pininfarina and is working as a development partner with Bugatti. They've launched a new Level 4 autonomous electric car brand called Verne after the science fiction writer Jules Verne, of course, coming to market in 2026. Verne is using Mobileye's Level 4 autonomy system, and therefore its core technology is more the vehicle platform than the autonomous driving system itself. They wrote about it in their press release. The vehicle is built on a completely new platform designed around safety and comfort, engineered solely for autonomous driving using the Mobileye Drive autonomous platform. It is completely rethought, conceived, designed, and engineered as a safe and comfortable autonomous vehicle. Built from the ground up, it is free from the compromises and disadvantages necessary in using a legacy platform built for human driving. Now, this is a really neat looking vehicle. If you're familiar with what Tesla has shown about their robo-taxi, that little two-seater coupe thing, this is very similar to that. This is, again, a two-passenger vehicle. It's got no steering function at all. Everything is controlled seemingly through these touchpads, which is more of an entertainment thing than any kind of driver aid. And it's an interesting looking car. The sliding door is going to make it easy to get in and out. It's not going to have to worry so much about curbs and puddles and scraping up other doors. So this is really interesting. With any of these robo-taxis, though, you have to really pay attention to what we're looking at here. This is going to be a really tough sell in the United States, or actually any part of North America, because of the ADA. That's the American with Disabilities Act. It's going to be really tough to see anybody with mobility issues, with a wheelchair, with a walker, someone elderly, get in and out of this thing in any kind of dignified manner, right? So this is not the kind of thing that's going to provide e-mobility for everybody. This is really looking at able-bodied adults who can get in and out of vehicles easily, who don't need any kind of special accommodations. That is still the overwhelming mass majority of people, however. So there is definitely going to be a market for this thing. And I can see a world where it would be great to be able to put the kids into this thing, send them off to school, get a notification on your phone when they get there safely. So all of these things are definitely real, definitely exciting possible futures, and we'd love to see it. Moving on to another autonomous driving story, XPeng's founder tested out Tesla FSD in the U.S. to see how it compares to XPeng. For a couple of years, two of the leading driving systems pushing the limits of automotive technology have been Tesla's full self-driving FSD, or XPeng's Navigational Guided Pilot, XNGP. XPeng's founder, He XPeng, took to LinkedIn to tease his experience in the U.S. testing Tesla FSD V12.3.6. Per his post, "I am truly impressed by the significant progress FSD has made in just a few months. It offers valuable features and a user experience that we can learn from. I believe 2025 will be a pivotal ChatGPT moment for the fully autonomous driving era, revolutionizing how we interact with technology and fundamentally transforming the way we travel." XPeng shared that he also tested a Waymo self-driving vehicle, which he believes performed better than FSD in downtown San Francisco, but adds that Tesla's technology excelled around Silicon Valley, particularly on highways. Now, a couple of things I want to draw attention to here, just because I think that they're culturally significant, not necessarily significant to the article. I think the comment where he says that he's impressed by the significant progress full self-driving has made in just a few months is kind of a masterclass in corporate shade, with the implication being that they're so far ahead of where they were 6 months ago or 7 months ago that it's significant and noticeable. And I think that that's very true, but he frames it in a way that kind of says they're not really there and they haven't been there and that they're still getting close. So I thought that was significant. I would love to be this sharp when it comes to this kind of corporate backstabbing doublespeak kind of thing. I think it would have taken me a lot further in my career. The other thing I want to point out is that he's talking about a ChatGPT moment. Now, just a few years ago in 2021, when I was writing for Electrek the first time, there was a RV show in Florida where Airstream showed off a, I don't want to say autonomous, but a AI kind of enabled Bambi trailer. And it rested on its axle, sort of like a Segway. And it was able to park itself into a parking space or come out and attach itself to a hitch on the back of your vehicle. And back then, we said RVs were having their iPhone moment. And several times in the years since and in the years before, we've talked about things having an iPhone moment. This is the first time I've ever seen a major CEO in a public forum talk about a ChatGPT moment. And I think that's significant. I think that people 5-10 years from now may not be talking about the iPhone moment. I think we've kind of come to take for granted now that the smartphone design style functionality is ubiquitous. What a revolutionary thing that iPhone display was, that iPhone launch was in 2007, back when we were all living through it, at least those of us with long enough memories. And I think that's interesting. So again, I just want to point both of those things out and see what you think of that. And while we're on the topic of Tesla and kind of looking at things a different way, Tire Rack has done a number of tests to try to determine whether or not tires that were specially made for EVs make a big difference in terms of driving characteristics and, of course, range efficiency. Fascinating new test highlights the impressive difference EV-specific tires can make on the efficiency of a Tesla Model 3. Now, they tested a number of different tires. Obviously, Tire Rack works with a number of different tire vendors, and here are the results. The most efficient tires are here on the left. You got the Hankook Ion Evo AS at 263 watt hours per mile, going all the way down at number six, Pirelli P0, 274, a little bit further, Michelin Pilot Sports at 290 and 292 watt hours per mile. Now, this is a big difference, right? You're talking about 30 watt hours per mile from the best to the worst, give or take. On the right is a little bit more interesting. This is more of a subjective test. They did cornering tests. They did performance tests. They took these same tires to a racetrack on a Tesla Model 3 and gave it, I don't want to say completely arbitrary numbers. They gave them subjective numbers, right? We're not looking at lap times here. We're not looking at lateral acceleration figures. We're just looking at how did they do on the track. And the Michelin Pilot Sport, which was the second least efficient tire, is the highest ranked on a track. Now, anybody who's familiar with racing and motorsports probably could have seen this one coming, right? The soft tire is the one that runs out the fastest, wears out the fastest, gives you the most mechanical grip, the most tire grip, and obviously the best handling and performance experience, right? So that's going to be at the top, even though it might be less efficient in terms of friction. What's really interesting here is that it's not directly one-to-one. If you look kind of right there in the middle, you've got the Michelin Pilot Sport All Season. You've got the Bridgestone Turanza is near the bottom of the list on both sides. So it's not particularly efficient and it's not particularly good on a racetrack. It's probably not good news for Bridgestone. But all in all, I think this is really interesting. It's a great article by Fred, definitely worth checking out. And I also wanted to point out this comment. This is the top comment at the time I was recording this. It's a comment by Jamie E. It says, this is cool, but they left out bargain basement tires like the Century UHP, which at $88 a tire is almost $600 cheaper than the Pirellis for a set of four. And it's a lot cheaper than the Pilot Cups for sure. I would like to see the math on how efficiency translates to savings over the average lifespan of tires. Edit, I ran an example. In SoCal, 16.8 cents per kilowatt hour with a 30,000 mile lifespan, the difference of 10 in efficiency becomes $50 over the span of the tire. If you want to do your own calculation in your area, the formula is tire life in miles times efficiency in kilowatt hour per mile divided by 1,000 times electricity price per kilowatt hour equals total energy cost of the life of one tire. So interesting stuff. Time to do some math. I don't know how much math you guys really want to do on your time off. And while I'm struggling to tie this one into math, I can definitely say when you get to 88 miles an hour, you're going to see something pretty serious. Electrogenic is bringing the DeLorean DMC-12 back to the future with a drop-in EV conversion kit. Now, there's a ton of companies out there right now doing resto mods, whether we're talking about Singer Porsche doing an air-cooled, high-performance internal combustion version of the classic Porsche 911, whether you're talking about Everati building that all-electric Ford GT40. There is a market for classic vehicles that have been updated with modern technology, and especially with the type of acceleration and performance that comes from electric motors, combined with the ease with which you can get these vehicles registered in some markets. It's kind of a no-brainer. So I'm going to read this real quick. Where BEV conversions are going, we don't need roads. Actually, we still need roads, but we no longer need to take a look at the original DeLorean DMC-12, considered by many as a design far ahead of its time, including me, as a dated combustion classic. Now, I want to say two things about this. Number one, the DeLorean has always been trash. It's always been beautiful trash, compellingly styled trash, but it's always been trash. It had a Renault V6, had terrible suspension. It was not a fun car to drive. If you ever spent time behind the wheel in one of these things, absolute garbage. However, the styling has always been nearly perfect. It's one of the best wedge-shaped designs of the late 70s, early 80s. The interior was laid out really efficiently, and it just kind of has always been a classic. So, couple of things I want to point out on this. Electrogenic has hidden the charging point behind a sliding driver's license plate. Love that. It's a great way to keep the car's original lines intact and still have a easily accessible charging port for any of these stalls that you can back into. They have avoided the temptation of converting the lights to LED. I don't think that that works on a car like this. I think it barely works on some modern designs that were built around the LED lights. And if you look on the inside, they have a very cleverly integrated set of controls. They've removed that PRNDL of the conventional transmission or that manual gearbox, if it happened to be a manual model. And they've put in a rotary. We've become very familiar with these in Mazdas, Toyotas, things like that. And then the battery gauge and the effectively the gear that you're in are shown in an LCD display that lives inside the old school dashboard. So you're still getting that RPM data. You're still getting that mile per hour data. You're still getting the temp data, oil, things like that, which I don't know what kind of oil pressure you'd be looking for, but hey, I'm sure there's something. And that I think is a very clean and neat integration. I'd love to see something a little bit more ambitious, not quite feeling a screen in one of these, but I think if you had a little bit more budget, you could make something really slick in there. That's all I've got for today, June 26, 2024. A little light on Tesla news today, but that just means the comments will be light. Be sure to like and subscribe if you like what you heard. And if not, man, it's too bad. We actually are the only show on YouTube. So you're going to have to stick with it here, and we'll see you tomorrow.